Hello and welcome to another episode of Catch the Flavor. I'm Judd. Co-hosting on the flanker mic is Jacob.
Yep.
And Jacob has a guest this afternoon, or this it's afternoon if you're here on the East Coast. And that'll be our first half of our show, forming on human rights. And in particular, one that'll be of value to you is whether or not a restaurant can bar you from entering and using their washroom. So, Jacob, would you like to take us in?
Okay. So we are here with our guest, and her name is Natasha Persu. She is from an organization called Formative Law. She has graduated from Osgoode Law School, and she is also a staff lawyer at a Human Rights Legal Support Center, a law professor at – she was formerly a law professor at SW University in Chongqing, China. And she has also taught community legal issues class / law class at George Brown College. And I'm here with Natasha. How are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. So, Natasha, our first question is going to be, in your own words, how would you define the term human rights?
Human rights are really fundamental and integral principles upon which I think any society should be based. But I think people get hung up on the word rights without recognizing that, in conjunction with rights, there are also corresponding responsibilities and obligations that we have as members of society.
And what are some of your personal experiences that where you had to deal personally or even with a client where their human rights have been violated?
Sure. The majority of the cases that I deal with fall within the employment context, which, really makes sense. I think that's where people spend the bulk of their lives, at work. And so, accordingly, what happens is employers sometimes run afoul of human rights legislation by not recognizing that they have responsibilities towards their employees. So the most common cases are within employment and also with respect to the accommodation of disabilities within the employment context. Again, it can be things as simple as an employee requiring accommodation with respect to a particular type of chair, a particular type of program that they need to do their work, those kinds of things. But even those simple things can sometimes be difficult for an employer to grasp in terms of their obligation to accommodate.
I totally agree with that, the explanation of that. And I have to say, personally, I've seen stuff at my work where they might have stuff that I wasn't really comfortable with doing, and even some things that sort of might have violated a couple of the Employment Act. There was actually one time when I was called into work, and we always have a schedule where it's set on the wall. And there was one day I came in and I was actually let go after an hour of work. And I was pretty disappointed with that because I had to take transit there and also take it back. And
of course,
also my parents were super mad at me because I didn't reason with my manager properly to explain if I can have extension of hours. And there was also a time at my work where I had to clean a fridge all by myself, move heavy equipment, even clean off mold without using proper equipment to protect myself from the exposure of it. And that wasn't the first time I've done it. It was actually done twice. And I was actually been to ask. I might have to do it again this year, but I'm probably going to bring up to my manager if I can wear protection or if I have someone else to do it with me, because it's very harmful. I could tell it's harmful to my health, and also it takes a long time if someone just does it by themselves.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the things that you've raised, those specific examples, may also be violations of the Employment Standards Act or the Occupational Health and Safety Act. So absolutely, those can be issues.
And I also noticed I've been to the campuses of George Brown and Ryerson, and they have had so much things where that have been useful to students that do show rights and also protect privacy. If at George Brown and Ryerson, they have gender neutral washrooms, and also one of my teachers, she teaches event planning, campaign proposal, and she is actually has a disability, and I was good that George Brown allowed her to have a personal chair that would accommodate her disability. And there are also many services offered at George Brown that accommodate for students that will help them with learning disabilities, extra time on tests, even just health services. And it's promoted all over the campus. And I just have to say, good job for George Brown.
And, absolutely.
Yeah. And would you like to explain which type of sections that stand out for the Human Rights Code that you think are very important in Canadian society and why they are important?
Sure. You know, funny enough, it's you know, the code, I think all of the sections of the code itself are very important, and I think they're integral to everyone. But I think the part that stands out for me the most is actually the introduction to the code, which in and of itself is not law, but, you know, it speaks about the inherent, you know, the recognition of the inherent worth and dignity of every person, regardless. You know, it doesn't speak only about Canadian citizens or, you know, permanent residents. It applies to everyone. So I think the far-reaching impact of that is particularly important. I think that's something that stands out for me the most.
Yeah, I totally agree. The Canadian, if listeners that are not listening in Toronto or, I mean, in Canada, we are an international show. So the Canadian Human Rights Act is a very important act, which was passed in the Parliament of Canada in the year of 1977. And it deals with all types of discrimination, which is based on factors such as race, color, religion, age, sex, family status, and much more. And this charter of rights applies to all the provinces in Canada. And I have to say, this is a very important act. I totally agree with Natasha on the statement where it applies to everyone. It shouldn't just apply to everyone just in Canada, but all over the world, because discrimination is seen worldwide. In like it, many people have been sent out of their countries because they have either been discriminated and they have come into Canada and have also been to other countries. And discrimination is a huge term because there has been so many things we've seen on the news, even probably experienced in our everyday lives, or have you even seen it? And it's just like, if it's just very, it's everywhere. Like, I have to say it's insidious because it gets worse every single day as we have leaders that are, and politicians, and even people we may see in our city, or even friends, family that when you even like discuss topics with them or even see them talk about these things, discrimination it comes into a factor when many conversations are being told.
Yeah, I mean, as you've said, I think in terms of the current climate right now, that's where, you know, I think we were all hyper aware of the discrimination. And I think, again, as you know, if I can say, as Canadians, sometimes we get a little bit smug, perhaps, that, you know, the state of things here may be better than our neighbors to the south, but it's not always, that's not always the case. And I think we have to be mindful of the events and the incidents that are happening here, and so that we're in a better position to address them.
And I totally agree. Like, I've faced discrimination personally in my life, just especially like at my age. There's like a tendency between sometimes, like if we see adults and teens, teenagers are labeled as troublemakers. They are unintelligent sometimes, just because of how some adults portray and see them through either in like their communities or even through television shows or even media. And personally, I have a time where me and my friends were at a Dollarama getting stuff for our student placement. We had to go host an event, and we were actually followed by security. And there was me, my friend, and another student. She was in the social work field. And a security guard was following us around. She was following everyone. And there are also many other students in that Dollarama because it's a populated community. And my friend actually came up to her, and she's like, he asked her, "Why are you following us? You know, this is, you're profiling us. You can," and she was like, "Oh, it's just the way you guys are dressed." And I was just like, I had to, I was surprised by that. And there's also been a couple of other times where people at school, like, you also may see it at stores if you go shopping, even if you're like a student. I have to say this is true. They usually come up to younger students and they ask you, "Oh, do you need help?" Because they might think, "Oh, you're unintelligent. You don't know what you're doing," and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just basically, it's just so many things people just misunderstand about many different types of people. And it just has to be a change in our communities and just in the future, so it doesn't just harm anybody personally or groups.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of, I mean, what you've described is, you know, profiling, which is always and usually, I should say, based on general assumptions and stereotypes about a particular group of people, whether they're young, whether they're Black, whether they're whatever, right? And so when you resort to those kinds of basic common denominators or what you think they are, that's what happens. And that's just a perfect example of how discrimination arises and is quite frankly prevalent in many interactions that we have on a daily basis.
And I'm just wondering, you've taught at many places, including the school I went to, which was George Brown. And I'm just wondering, what was your experience teaching the course Community Legal Issues, Human Rights, and /Law?
I really, in particular, enjoyed my time at George Brown, simply because I found the students were really receptive to this information. In fact, I wouldn't even say receptive, I would say hungry. Because I think the whole basis, like, I mean, you can have rights, which is fine, but the reality is that most people are not aware of what their rights and their obligations are. And so, you know, with respect to different areas of law, so in that course, we covered a vast array of just basic legal concepts, from disability rights to housing rights, criminal justice system issues. And so, you know, I found that the students were really eager to understand what their rights were, because I think, again, the understanding was, so many people said to me after the class, I just didn't know that. And I think having that knowledge, I mean, not to sound cliche or corny, but having that knowledge really is empowering, because you then have an opportunity to make full decisions when you are, you know, when you encounter a similar situation, or at least you now have the resources to reach out to somebody to say, "Hey, this happened to me, and it just didn't seem right. You know, and what are my legal options?" Right. So I loved that course, you know, I miss my students. They were all fantastic. So yeah.
So I'm just wondering, me and a couple of the staff were talking about a recent incident that happened with a trauma woman that was a complaint over washroom access, and that was so this woman, she was born with a
spina bifida,
disability, and she had it since she was 6 years old, and she's been walking with crutches. Currently today she is at the age of 24, and basically the background of what happened, she was trying to go into a bar to use the bathroom, and one of the waitresses blocked her. Mm-hmm. And she basically said she couldn't go down to use the bathroom because if she were to fall down the stairs, they were afraid that the bar would be sued because there wasn't proper accessibility for a person of a disability to access a washroom. And She also was harassed by the waitress because she was
No, what happened? Yeah. I believe what happened was the waitress was blocking the thing and said, mm-hmm. you know, don't go down the stairs. You know, I don't want you to get to, I don't want to have to get sued. Mm-hmm. And then when she's like, no, just let me downstairs. She said, okay, everyone here is my witness. You know, if she falls down, she can't sue me, which I don't think is legally true.
Absolutely.
So, but you're here and you know this. So legally, does a restaurant have the ability to ban someone on the grounds that they may be sued or ban anyone from the washroom? I was told this afternoon that you can actually use any public restroom regardless of whether you purchase something or not.
Sure. So, you know, so it's strictly not. So we have a couple of issues here. So the first issue is, as you said, can a restaurant generally ban someone from using their restroom? I'm not aware of any legislation that says, you know, they have the right to ban you. You know, if you just need to use the washroom, then it shouldn't be an issue. But it does get into other areas if they think that, you may be bringing things onto the premises, that mm-hmm. kind of thing, which is certainly not the issue here. Again, I think what happened here is that there were assumptions made about this woman's ability. And merely to go down a flight of stairs. And despite her saying, no, I quite frankly, I think, unfortunately, the waitress was unaware of, what this woman's, rights were. And she was also, quite frankly, unaware of what her obligations were to her to be able to allow her to access the washroom. And so, again, I think the potentially discriminatory aspect of this is that she made, certain assumptions about what this woman's abilities were just based on her appearance.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I wanted to bring up, there was a transit, one of the students in my program, she did a presentation on the accessibility of the TTC, and mm-hmm. there are about 70, more than 70 TTC subway stations, only at about, I think, 20... I believe the number was 24 of them are accessible, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that only includes stations such as terminal stations like Finch, Shepherd, Union, and Downsview, and these tend to be busier subway stations. But there's also a project my friend was trying to he came in for the radio show last time, and he works as a co-op student for Metrolinx, and they're currently doing a project for Kipling's subway station.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make that more accessible. And I think I also looked at the new Young University subway extension. They're also going to make all those stations that are supposed to open in 2017 accessible to every single passenger that is going to ride them in the future.
Yeah. And I think, again, the issue is universal design, right? And I think there's more and more, a push for that, where things have traditionally been designed, and infrastructure has been centered around those who are quote unquote able-bodied. Whereas it doesn't, what's the harm to anyone in having ramps versus stairs, right? And so, I think, quite frankly, in terms of what the TTC and Metrolinx is doing, is long overdue, because I think, individuals with disabilities, I think of, parents with children in strollers can access certain areas as well. It's 2017, and I think there has been a lot of information out there about universal accessibility and universal design. That this is something that, as I said before, is long overdue. It's about time.
And what would you like to see Toronto do, just like based on like human rights issues and
mobility rights?
I mean,
as we sit here and talk, that was 2 days ago, that woman in the mm-hmm. bathroom. And on April 9th, yeah. the Phoenix Nightclub has a show, and some of my friends are going, and we have to check ahead because one of our friends is in a wheelchair, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Why is this a thing? Like, you think that people in wheelchairs don't have ears and don't listen to music? Like, that doesn't make sense
Absolutely.
To me. Or, like, even the fact that people are going to be drunk a lot of the times. Like, why would you want a safer way of exiting and entering the building anyway? Mm-hmm. But, like, Is there a reason why people don't – like, is there people who, like, argue against it economically, or is it just, like, short-sightedness? I'm so used to seeing able-bodied people I put in stairs.
I think it's a combination of both, right? That I think that because our design of our cities and our buildings and whatnot have not taken into account, have quite frankly made people with disabilities invisible. And so, you know, rather than thinking about everybody's needs, you only think about the people that you, for the most part, interact with. And I think that has resulted in a bit of, segregation, you know, if we want to use that word, you know, between those who are able-bodied, again, and those who aren't. And so, you know, I think it is absolutely short-sightedness. Because you're only seeing people only seem to be concerned with their own particular needs without taking, other people's needs into account. But then there's also the issue of cost. And so, you know, I do want to raise legislation called the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act, which requires businesses to be accessible, fully accessible. Within just a few years. And so, you know, that kind of compliance with that legislation, again, is starting to wake people up, because usually it's only when a law is passed and you're required to. But what I'd like to see for Toronto is that it shouldn't have to take a law for people to be aware of that and to take those kinds of steps to ensure that there's accessibility for everyone.
Just wanted to add on, I think there's a possible reason why certain organizations / businesses forget to install maybe accessibility, like certain stairs, ramps, and elevators. It's probably just the cost of it. For example, I go to a church in North York, and they installed an elevator about, I think, 5 years ago, but it cost the church $1 million. And the church usually gets its money from the congregation, also from individual member donations. And I just have to say, majority of my church is of older participants and younger, and even some of them have mobility standards. And I just have to say, it was a good idea for the church to install it, but I think some people took it as a advantage. Oh, I'll just ride this like it's a ride or something. And some people took that as a thing. The elevator actually broke down one time, and it took a couple months to rebuild. And just based on my church is very old, and the stairways are very steep and narrow, and I've actually seen people trip on it before. And
does bring a good point, though, like when it comes to like older buildings, like historical sites and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of things where, like, well, it was built however many years ago, and is there ever like pushback on like historical front, like, oh, I want to make Massey Hall more accessible, or I want to do this? It was like, oh, no, this is where the Stones puked, you know, in 1975, or this is where Bob Dylan tripped, you know. We can't have this removed. I mean, not saying it's pro or con, but is there any kind of pushback on like historic sites? Or
I think there has to be. I think when it comes to those, making those types of buildings accessible, there are I think quite a few resources architecturally and whatnot in terms of preserving the historical integrity of the building while still making it accessible. And
cool.
So like a public space such as, you know, Massey Hall or whatnot, if the city has to spend money or whomever has to spend money, then I think I think we get focused on the cost of putting in the, these accommodations. But I struggle with that term, because I don't want it to be seen as, you know, we're doing a favor for certain people, because that's not what it is. I think, again, when you broaden, you know, your horizons, and again, I think the cost of you know, whatever that may be, and you know, Jacob, I take your point about the church, because that's a private space, that's very small, and the funding is limited. But when we're talking about big spaces or historical spaces within Toronto or outside of Toronto, you know, I think there are the resources to do it. And I think, again, that there are the appropriate design consultants who again, can balance the historical integrity while still making the space accessible.
And I'm just wondering, what are the plans for the future for you and your...
I hope to continue doing what I'm doing. I really enjoy the work that I do. I hope to continue balancing, you know, the teaching that I do with my practice. And we'll see, you know, where it goes from there.
Thank you so much for calling in, Natasha.
Is there anything else you'd like to say that we didn't bring up? And is there a Twitter or Facebook or someplace you'd like to plug where people can get in contact with you?
All right, you can reach me at my website at Formative LLP. Myself and my colleague, we're in a position to provide legal advice. Should people think or feel that they have encountered an issue of discrimination or harassment or, you know, concerns with their employment.
All right, good then. All right.
All right. Thank you very much, Natasha.
Do you have any song requests?
And we'll be back later on.
Yeah, sure. Speaking of that, I think we'll play something from Jazz at Massey Hall, which is one of the better albums maybe ever recorded of live jazz. So see if we can grab some of that. We might have to cut it a bit short, but, you know, enjoy All the Things You Are with Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, and Charles Mingus. I think Charlie Parker's not even playing a real horn. It's actually a toy. Enjoy this. forgive Max Roach's solo in this. I forget, guys, but it's going well so far. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. Kind of had to play all of that. That was off Jazz at Massey Hall, recorded on May 15th, 1953, right here in Toronto, Canada. And for any of you younger people wondering why we're playing that, I think on Do the Right Thing, I think Samuel Jackson's character actually mentions Charles Mingus by name when he's going through like the best musicians you should listen to. And also, I wanted to take a brief break before we launch into this. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Steve King. He was a profile, not the author, who did the Gunslinger series and a bunch of famous horror novels, probably most famously known, The Shining. This is Stephen King, the representative from Iowa's 4th Congressional District. He's 67 years old, and he's been the representative since 2013. Now, why are we bringing him up? Because he's said a lot of different things, a lot of things that are not very good and not very cool. In fact, I actually take them out and let you hear them. So it's not just me making a...
In terms of people missing him, Susana Martinez...
So here, he's been profiled on The Daily Show. And here's a comment of his talking about minorities. And you can take a listen.
After 2012. And I was...
Around though.
I think they'll be around. That hall today, that hall is wired. That hall is wired. Unhappy, dissatisfied.
That have been made by these other categories of people that you're talking about, where did any other subgroup of people contribute more to civilization?
Than white people?
Than Western civilization itself that's rooted in Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and the United States of America, and every place where the footprint of Christianity settled the world.
Asia?
That's all of Western civilization.
Well,
that if you're looking at the ledger of Western civilization, for every flourishing democracy, you have, you got Hitler and Stalin as well. So there's a lot of... side.
Based on Christianity.
That's one. There's a whole bunch more Steve King comments, but we'll dive into that the first bit. What has other groups contributed? I mean, he calls them subgroups, not minorities, which is, I guess, a fair point. Like you could say someone's, you know, in certain civilizations in Tokyo, I'd be a minority, right? That's not a problem. I mean, but he says subgroups. That has a connotation that I think is disgusting and ridiculous. Not like subgroups, like a subgroup of like heavy metal music or a subgroup of like lima beans or something, yeah. Where it's like a separate formulation. This guy clearly means what he said. And before, at least you think he doesn't mean what he says.
You wrote that Wilders understands that culture and demographics are our destiny. We cannot restore our civilization with somebody else's babies. This is being condemned by many regions of American politics and citizenry. What did you mean?
Well, of course, I meant exactly what I said, as it always is the case, Chris, and to
So there we go. He has no, like, misgivings. This is not him saying this thing out of some kind of, oh, what I meant to say was this, or misspeaking. There's numerous clips of this man talking about the need for white civilization to have you know, other babies are – not. His main quote that he came out with about a week or two ago was that you can't rebuild civilization with other people's babies. And I have written down some facts and some stats. So when you think of the Statue of Liberty, what do you think of? What country comes to mind?
USA. But right. When you think about it, the – France gave it to USA as a gift.
Frederick Auguste Bartholdi was the fun who produced it, and 3.2 million visitors showed up in 2009. Mm-hmm. But it's innumerable tourist dollars. And guess who is in charge of this? The U.S. National State Park Service. And it is considered a UNESCO World Heritage Site of a cultural type. So right there is a cultural artifact produced by somebody who is not an American. It would be somebody else's baby. I can't believe this is – and the big problem here, I mean, it is a problem that this man holds office and holds power with these clan-like views. It's that people are supporting him. There's a quote that says Steve being Steve. All right? So Iowa voters – a quote from The Guardian. So this is not salon.com or like blacklivesmatter.org. This is a like legitimate – newspaper in the sense of it doesn't really have an agenda. They say Steve being Steve, Iowa voters on King somebody else's baby remark. So outside his rural congressional district stretching over 39 Iowa counties, congressional conservative man Steve King's stream – sorry, it says conservative congressman Steve King's stream of inflammatory comments generate outrage and condemnation. Back home, they rate little more than a shrug. I believe I meant raise, but whatever. I'm not going to question The Guardian. That's just Steve being Steve, was how Tom Ryder put it, looking into a mirror while getting his hair cut on Thursday in Carroll. He doesn't pull any punches. And that's the end. I'm sick of this, like, I tell it like it is nonsense. When Ivana, when Trump's wife, the fourth, was like, my husband is raw. He is real, right? You know, when he made those comments about grabbing women and stuff. I'm tired of this whole, like, I just tell it like it is. Your ignorance is not something you should bandy about and be proud of because you can't control your mind or your temper. This is disgusting that this man is getting any support at all. Considering that even with the most like negative of views, 47 million people in the U.S. are immigrants or like from elsewhere, 300 million are like out of 300 million. It won't be till 2060 that white people would be in a minority anyway. And what do you mean? All of Americans were immigrants. They immigrated from England. They didn't keep immigrant – like the civilization they came with. He didn't. They purposefully took away the queen and the monarchy, which was their European civilization, but he mentioned in his previous comment, and instilled instead a different and brand new form of democracy represented by the people for the people. So this, I cannot believe this is happening. It's regressive and it really wrecks my heart. Do you have any comments to this?
I just have to say, the shocking statistic of just how many people have voted for a leader
in the U.S. just with the same mindset as this?
I mean, I'm going to say Donald Trump is the exact same. That's putting words in his mouth, and that's not fair. But the idea of
– yeah, but just someone that is racist.
Jesus Christ almighty. Wait a minute.
Many different
– so wait a minute. Oh, God. This guy's ridiculous. In addition, it's not like he just had one fleeting moment of this. He also mentioned the idea of putting Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. He mentioned that immigrant I don't want to say these even things out loud. In quotations, immigrant children have calves the size of cantaloupes because of carrying marijuana across the border. And he supports fortifying a border wall by placing an electric wire on top. First of all, way to be a cheap conservative Republican, by the way. You can't spring for more wire. Jesus. Also, that's not going to do anything. Cut for ideology. Not for profit. I can't believe it. Like, he's in Iowa City. He's like Storm Lake with large meat processing plants and this whole – you almost want to believe that this era died. Like, with the internet – and with things like that, but this ignorance has kind of stopped. This rural, you know, this image of a clan as some backwoods person and being a fringe is kind of was kind of what people believed for years, and it's kind of come back. And we were talking to Dimitri, who's an older gentleman in the room before we came in here, and he was saying he hasn't seen anything like this since the Vietnam War. That's how regressive we've become. Mm-hmm. And I just it's one thing if now people are against him. And it ties into Canada too. There's a Canadian problem in that there's a conservative member of our government, Lynn Bayek, who mentioned that residential schools, some people, that there was good done in residential schools and that she said that there is – how do I phrase this delicately – she mentioned that some people like owe their lives to residential schools, meaning that people like some people benefited. And again, why don't you tell the story of what went on in residential?
So what happened in some residential schools in the original communities. So one of the speakers, I go to George Brown College and we had a guest speaker. He was an Aboriginal chief from I believe
it doesn't matter, Blackfoot, Cree. They took them all. They took them all and we tried to re-educate them and westernize them. Mm-hmm. That was the vibe.
And basically he told a story about where one of his former friends, a friend of his, he was also a chief. When he was a young child of 8 years old, he went to a school and he was trying to greet – I think he was either the teacher or the principal – with a handshake, and he called him friend, and the teacher took that a different way, and he actually took the student and he beat him in a separate room, and that scarred him for life. And it's just disgusting when you hear how people that were in in this country and they built it up long before us and how they were treated now is just
– And least you think we're making this up again. This was on like March the 16th. This is like this month. All right? You didn't even have your brackets formulated for like March Madness or like they hadn't broken yet and this is happening. Same with the disabled woman who 2 days ago wasn't allowed into a bar. Right? These aren't just people making up like, oh, it's all in the past and you guys are overreacting. Sometimes, probably, maybe, but not today and not on this. So, she will not resign her seat. She is a conservative senator and she'll hold under her spot on the Senate's Aboriginal People's Committee, according to an emailed statement from her office, that despite a call from the committee chair that asked her to consider stepping down in the wake of her controversial remarks, which she made on the floor of the Red Chamber last week. The senator wishes to thank everyone who took the time to read her speech in its entirety or who heard it in the context it was intended, read the statement from Bayek's office. It is also said that Bayek is extremely grateful to people who respectfully engage with her in this era of fake news and exaggeration. And there it is again. Like, it's not like I misspoke, meaning to say that, like, the idea of educating people is good. That's not what she said. And this idea of fake news and exaggeration. We have quoted The Guardian, The Toronto Star 2 times, like multiple other comments. Like, I mean, how much more do you need? The conservative comment comes from McLean's. These are two separate forms of fake news. Like, they got together to make 2 fake news competing papers. Like, why would you do that? It's ridiculous. It just, it's, oh, I can't. Jupiter Strange, what's up?
Have to go.
Gotta get out?
Yep.
What's going? All right.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I have to head out. This is your co-host, Jacob. Thank you for listening to our first segment on human rights with Natasha Pursued.
And what do we have for next week? What are we planning?
For next week, we'll be introducing our sexual ed. And our guests are from Planned Parenthood. And we are going to bring some interviews that me and one of my friends have done at the Ryerson University and also George Brown College, where we interviewed a couple of students about what they learned in sexual ed back in high school and what their experiences were like, and basically what they would change if they were to learn it at a different perspective.
Yeah, really cool, interesting, perfect stuff for like underground radio, you know, the stuff you don't hear in school.
Yes.
But it's very well formulated and respectful, and you shouldn't feel embarrassed to listen to it. I'm actually excited for it. All right, cool. Thanks, Jacob. Great interview, and we'll just continue on here. We got another maybe 5 minutes, or we could just play some music.
Yep.
But I'm not too sure. Yeah, I'll keep talking about this just for one last, just to drive the point home on this, just because there's a few points I still need to make, which is I'll give you a comment so no one thinks I'm saying it out of whatever. So Bayek, in her speech on March the 7th, highlighted what she called the somewhat different side of a residential school story. So she spoke of, quote, the kindly and well-intentioned men and women whose remarkable works, good deeds, and historical tales in the residential schools go unacknowledged. Obviously, negative issues must be addressed, she said, but it is unfortunate that they are sometimes magnified and considered more newsworthy than the abundance of good. So those comments prompted a flurry of disapproval in the ensuing days. Romeo Sagnash, an NDP MP from Quebec who attended a residential school as a child, said Bayek's comments were like saying there are some good sides to what Hitler did to the Jewish community, and called for her to resign her seat. At least 150,000 First Nations, Métis, and Inuit youth went through the schools over several decades. What an unknown member, estimated to be in the thousands, died. Died. Like, schools sometimes sucked for me, but I don't remember kids dying after kindergarten. It's useless. Like, it's the fact that you could see there's any good that would outweigh this is baffling. Liberal MP Don Rusnak, who is the chair of that party's Indigenous caucus, said Thursday that he was disappointed by Bayek's statements and plans to invite her to meet and talk about the legacy of residential schools. If she's unwilling to see the problem with what she said in the Senate, then she doesn't deserve to be sitting, he said. And I just don't is there anyone here who's actually supporting her? Yeah, no, I don't believe so. But there's people who are actually in support of this. It's a similar way that Steve's comments, right, Steve King's comments are being brought out to light so and being bandied about. That's just Steve being Steve. Well, that's not good. Then Steve shouldn't be Steve. Not maybe in his private life, I guess I can't be a thought policeman, but in a public forum where you're supposed to represent every group of people who come to you, whose only requirement is to cast a vote, whether in your favor or against your favor, but to be a resident of your country, to suggest that you can't do it with other people's babies is ridiculous. Who are these other people? Do you have to be first generation? Like, what if you're born in America, but your parents are not from there? Are you other people's babies? Because you're technically half this or half that. And to suggest that they don't contribute and make a culture better or greater is ridiculous. Things evolve over time. Music changes. The music I played is different now. Like, society's constantly evolving. It's just a silly comment. There's no proof to this at all. There's Harvard I can't even get into it now, but there's Harvard-based, like, economics and what is her name? Nadia somebody. Oh, Nanoi Quinn, who basically promoted that. The idea of immigrants removing economic prosperity from other groups is just a lie. And there's another Danish researcher as well. Like, it's, again, multiple sources. This plays into a fear and a paranoia that comes about during times of economic depression. Fringe groups like the Klan and things like that and like hate groups thrive when there's another to blame. It doesn't even have to be the Klan. I don't want to pick on the Klan, but like it could be anybody. Like the idea that I'm blaming other people is it becomes from poverty, right? The world is bad. It must be these other people. That's when groups like this thrive. And that's even how Hitler came to power. It was in an era of poverty. So my point is it doesn't matter. There's no excuse for it ever. And I just hope that in the future we stop – I don't mind if you accidentally vote for someone who comes out to be racist. It happens. Or just makes a bad decision. It happens. Trudeau suddenly doesn't keep a promise. It happens, right? But this kind of stuff you should support, even just on the face of it. You shouldn't want someone representing you at this level in this way. I'd be embarrassed if I were from Iowa. And that's my closing remark. Let's hope it gets improved in the next – few weeks. Hopefully I'm not having to make the same points in the coming shows. Anyway, this has been Catch the Flavor. I'd like to thank Jordan for his excellent interview. And yeah, you can catch us back here every single week, Tuesdays. And sorry, Murphy Brown is here. Yeah, she's here. So hang on for Murphy Brown. And yeah, this is Your Racist Friend by They Might Be Giants. Be good to each other.
This is when
sorry, I misspoke. I said Jacob. I said Jordan by accident. It's Jacob. And Natasha was our guest. Thank you, guys.